Hi, I'm Josh, and if you're all out of duct tape and flex tape and masking tape and scotch tape, you can try McPherson tape. It will hold things except my attention.
Damn, that's insightful. I would say, hi, I am Matt, and if you think your life should in any way involve flex tape, you're wrong, and you should watch shit. What were the other two?
Homunculus and Boys from County Hell.
You know what? You should watch either, really. Okay. Boys from County Hell.
This is Charlie Dunn Austin. How did Homunculus end up on Netflix?
Dude, that was going to be my first question.
That is a question for the ages of how this really, really bizarre thing ended up. There, I see you got me.
I feel like Josh nailed it in a text.
Not since Tag has there been a weirder thing on.
Oh Netflix. Yeah, you might be right. Like, wow. Yeah.
But yeah, that was because it took me not for lack of interest, but just for timing, it took me a couple goes to get through to the end of it, you know. And
same
every time I went to go pull it up, I went to the wrong platform. So I'm like, okay, my body rejected the concept that it would be on Netflix. And so I was like, go to something else. Like, where the fuck is it? Like, oh yeah, Netflix.
I would argue this feels like it should only be on Shudder because it's too hard for Netflix to pull off, or Amazon wouldn't take the risk. Right?
Yeah, it's just...
I mean, what I would point out here, though, is Homunculus, you hardly know us. And this is Harsh or Hot Dog. So short this week was called Magda, and when I saw the thumbnail of this, I think I thought the guy was wearing some kind of, like, white nationalist t-shirt, and that this was going to be a play on MAGA, and it's not that at all, but that got me off to a weird start with this. But what it is a, Germanish? Some people speak in some kind of foreign language, but they're white people, so it's okay. And they're out in the forest because their friend has taken them to find this statue of a little girl, and he tells a story about how the little girl died playing this game with her friends, and that the legend is, if you play this game right here, then this girl will kill you. And he's like, so let's play. And his friends,
it's like an attempted Shaggy Dog, right?
Right. But there's always that thing that, like, and legend has it, if you stand in the full moon and kiss your elbow at this particular spot, then somebody will disembowel you and take you to hell. Like, so I'm not going to fucking do that.
But you got to make sure you knock three times and turn Wittershins.
Right. To say Wittershins whenever you can, because that's the best word.
Exactly, yeah.
But, like...
Yeah. Thank you, Nick and Molly Glover.
You never have the one person who's just like, fuck off. Like, what is to be gained? Either... we do something stupid and we waste our time, or we all get killed. And yet everyone's...
Yeah, there's no value in the effort.
I think one guy is like, come on. And he's like, oh, I'm sorry if you're too much of a pussy to do this. That's fine. He's like, oh, I'm no pussy. Let's play with the ghost. And so they play the game and they all end up dead. And that's the end of it. I feel like this doesn't quite get to the scary, because it's kind of funny the way that people just, like, jerk their head around and fall to the ground when they've been killed by the ghost. Like, it's very abrupt, and it kind of gives you that kind of thing, if you're a psychopath.
Well, it does kind of have that.
But is that not its goal?
I couldn't tell.
Yeah, I wasn't sure tone... That was... Yeah, I had the same problem. I was like, I don't know tone-wise where we're going with that part of it, or, like... And part of it is having it being... Like, having it be just in the middle of the day, like, it just sort of, it makes it harder to look for those cues. Like, I know sometimes you harp on, like, you know, like, as far as, like, production and this, that, whatever. But in this case, it was sort of like not having it be set at nighttime or whatever. It was kind of like, it was harder to get a feel for that. Like, I'm not putting it on the same level by any stretch, but Aaron and Novot's first film, Rabid, Dogs. Don't think about it. Well, either way, their first film. A lot of it's like in the just a dead ass middle of the day, and it's like it's very unsettling in a weird way to be like, but it's not dark, and there's all this crazy shit happening. Like, that doesn't feel right. And so it feels like they could have had that opportunity with this, but I just, like, I couldn't get the tone for, like, I had the same problem, Josh. I was like when this stuff was happening, I kind of did the same thing. I was like, but, so, yeah, I don't think that was really their goal.
So if I can put in a motion, if the court will allow it, that is exactly why I picked this one.
Okay.
Is it takes place in full daylight. Mm-hmm. And while you may think it's scary or funny, that's a rare
birth. Yeah, kind of just, you don't know where it sits.
Yes. And so, like, your mileage may vary, you know. What is it? Too rare to live? Too weird to live, too rare to die. Like, whatever. But the idea that they tried to pull this off in such a way, I found interesting, because it is just the most generic neck break. Like, you can find multiple videos on the internet of me doing that in comedy shows. You know, Susie Becker coming out and singing a shitty part of Frozen, and me just walking out going, like, what's the thing we did at Convergence 8 years ago? But I was just like, oh, that's, to me, there's, like, more respect added because it is a bigger swing.
Mm.
Because it is harder than doing, it's dark out, but I guess we're going to hide, you know, a couple of, like, blue or red lights, you know, over that hump, you know, behind the berm. Or something, like, you know, I feel like this one just was like, okay, no, we're just gonna own it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, I think you can still judge it for its values, but I thought that made it interesting, if that makes sense.
No, I agree that it is trying to do something that's not often done. It just seemed like it was going for serious and kind of missed it and got a little silly. It's that, you know, they were trying, it's when Ernest goes to camp. They're so serious, they got a little silly.
That movie has made me cry so many times.
Oh, me too, but I was doing the play on words, being like earnest in your speaking. But yes, okay. So all serious, right.
Sorry,
silly.
I was not smart enough to grok your joke. Sorry.
It's sad that...
Because, yeah, I was like, that to me is exactly why I like this.
And it was interesting. Like, I didn't feel the length of it. Just when it was done, I kind of shrugged, you know? How did it strike you? Charlie. Man, if he answered, I would just shit my pants because he's supposed to be in bed.
Yeah, I mean, I just didn't know what to do tonally wise. I thought it was interesting to commit to daylight because daylight, you know, much like, you know, many an 80s film, dark will cover over, you know, mistakes to some degree, or, you know, add some atmosphere where there really isn't any. Like, daylight will also kind of have that opposite effect, and so I thought it was an interesting thing, but I just couldn't, you know, I couldn't figure out 100%, you know, where they were coming down on it. So, I mean, like, you know, I wasn't, like, dark, mad, but it was also one of those things, like, maybe I wanted something more out of it or something. So I don't really know where to sit on that one exactly. I just kind of got to the end and went, all right.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, you know, there's worse feeling in the world.
Yeah, I'd call it a push.
Yeah, and I am definitely an up, because to me, this felt clearly comedic.
Mm.
Because otherwise, how the hell do you do, what is it, 6 of those neck snaps?
Right.
You can't do that and be meaning it.
So you were thinking more like Sideshow Bob stepping on rakes?
Yep.
Mm.
I think, because otherwise, I think you can get away with 1. But you if you do that many, you know what you're doing. So, to me, like, it was interesting that it was done in daylight. And it was also... like, that to me became comedic, where every time it happened yet again, I was like, just, you know, that was the way I watched this. And so, like, if that wasn't their effort, then I'm sorry, because I don't mean to insult you, but like that was absolutely how I took this.
That's awesome.
So I love this. So I'd say watch this.
Yeah, that's terrific.
Fair enough. Fair enough indeed. Let's hop on to the boys from
town. Yeah.
You want to? Los hijos del county. Anyway, del infierno. Infierno. As soon as we see that this is an Irish movie, I know we're going to get two things: charming accents and beautiful scenery. And this movie did not disappoint in either of those regards, but it also ends up being a pretty nifty, like, action-y, like, tinged with a little bit of dry humor, and then some actual straight-up horror into it as well. And a really cool twist on the vampire stuff. Kind of reminded me of From the Dark.
Mm-hmm.
The other one.
That was one that popped into my head.
It's also surprisingly long for what seems like a straightforward story. Like, not in a bad way, but I was just, like, watching this going, like, I'm going to take a nap before I finish this. Like, you know, because it's, like, 2 hours,
yeah,
right?
40-something, yeah.
Yeah, but not in a bad way, because usually that's my complaint.
Right.
Is come in at like 78 minutes, and this one is just like, I love every minute of this. It's just long and I'm tired, but they earn it. I felt
it has a little more plot than another movie would, I think, because you have the like first 20 minutes where you're getting to know the people, and then the whole scene with knocking over the cairn and the buffalo hitting the dude and all that stuff. And then there's the whole security guard vampire who gives us like a whole act two. But then we have additional act two because we also have the main vampire guy running around.
Yeah, I think we probably end up with like 5 or 7 acts.
Right. But you're right. It didn't feel like it dragged me at all.
No, I was never bored.
Well, it also like it does this thing, and maybe it's a little bit of bias because I feel like a lot of Western European ones will do this, where they don't seem to enjoy spending a lot of time up their own ass as far as like lore is concerned. They're just like, this is what this is, and you just go, well, all right. Like they're not super proud of themselves for coming up with some unique idea. They just sort of do it, and I found that to be super refreshing, just because it's like, because it is such an interesting, different sort of a take on this type of stuff. Like, it's not the biting, it's the if you get cut by the stone is what does the thing, and it's like that just changes the dynamic entirely. Plus you have the whole like the whole blood sucking drawing out business, which is just like a whole another thing. Like, that is utterly fascinating, the thing in and of itself. And mm-hmm. you have all the political and social components of like this dying small town and what it means to like, you know, to have the over.
Well, because this could happen in Kansas.
This is part of the plot of the Pixar movie Cars. Like, it's sort of like this is that story.
Yeah.
But then also too, what I really loved was that you have this dynamic, and maybe this is just growing up in Prescott, but like part of the story is you have like, oh well, this thing that you're doing, and being part of this project is gonna just kill the town and this, that, whatever else. And then it's like on the other side of the coin, like, so the other option would be not having that work, and so therefore. Then we lose our family's business, and then they, so like there's not a, as unromantic as it is to say, like there's not really like a correct answer, because it's sort of like you have these different factions of what it's going to mean to have the place be a different place 20 years down the line, and what that actually means, positive and negative. I don't think there's necessarily a right answer, and I find that really interesting that they had that as part of the story. Like, it's just like, that's such an easy thing to not have be part of it at all. But it just, that became a component of it. So that was super interesting in and of itself. Also, we had Manny Patinkin, Father Guido Sarducci guy again, week, which was a trip. And then also just, the one thing I have to really comment on this, like the horror elements, Josh, to your point, you know, like there are definitely some really good horror elements to this, and some really neat stuff on that end for sure. But I really, really enjoyed the kind of just the dry as fuck humor. Like, just this wonderfully.
Oh yeah. This is unbuttered toast
just
dry humor.
Of like that, just that wonderfully dry, just the just a mic drop, pick it back up again because you were told you had to put it in the stand kind of comedic timing and some of the stuff. And they're just never asking for a laugh. It's just like even the guy, even the beardy guy who's like feels like from first blush he's going to be your big comic relief. Like he has some funny comments and stuff like that, but it's not like he doesn't do like a big Adam Sandler-esque sort of, you know, show. He's a little clowny, but like he's not this big to do. And that even made it even more funny. No.
But this movie doesn't even introduce him until late second act.
Yeah. Once we get to the
And I'm just like, okay, site. When he showed up, it took me a minute to go, who the fuck is this guy? And I went, oh, he's Squirrely Dan. And like, but then it was just like, oh, they used him differently. But what the fuck? Like, I waited this long. It's been over an hour.
It took me a while to figure out who Francie was.
Yes, thank you.
The guys at
Which one's Francie?
Francie's the dad.
Oh,
sometimes
yeah.
Sometimes they call him Dad,
sure.
And sometimes they call him Francie. There's a part at the bar where they're like, well, what's he doing? And then, like, oh, he's probably worried about Francie. It's like, who the fuck is Francie? Oh, it's Dad. Yeah. Okay, well, that's fine.
Yeah, and weirdly, like, I would say to this movie's credit, it does give that character agency, right? Because there's times where he's the smart one. And tells people what's up and how to be. And then there's times where it's just him having a one-liner. But, like, he gets to do both. So it's like he's not just, like, a one-off. Like, but, which, again, I think speaks to at least my appreciation of the movie, is that, like, they seem to care about all their characters, whether or not you get a long time with them. You know, like, so again, I guess that's a long way of saying I think this is pretty
There's
well
just so
written.
Much more. And honestly, you know? Like, going into this, having watched that trailer multiple times, just laughing my ass off. And I was like, okay, I'm down for just a fun, frolicky, funny, like, you know, whatever. And there is that. But there's just there's a lot more to it and a lot more development. I would say one of the things, and reflecting on it after the last couple of days, like, the relationship between boyfriend guy that gets impaled on the rock and then turns into the monster, and our main guy, and then bartender lady, and their dynamic between them is so much better written than however many situational dramedies that this country puts out in terms of the dynamic between friends and or people that are in a relationship or whatever. I found that through the whole movie to be really interesting. And then you get to the end, and then you don't have the big ultimate, like, oh, well, now we realize that we've been in love since we were 10, and da 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 da. Like, that's not how that relationship, that's not how the movie decides that part of it ends at the end of the movie. Like, they just don't fall into that trap. It's like, well, goddamn, that's a thing you can actually do with a female character, is give her more control over her own goddamn life, and not just be a cipher for somebody else. Like, isn't that cool? So I love that stuff, too. And she's great, too. She has some fantastic lines and just a lot of presence of her own. So I don't know. Like, every area where they had a decision to make, they seemed to just really make the right ones.
Yeah, I really like that she's not, like, she is a little bit blasé about her boyfriend. Like, it's clear.
That is the best way to put that ever.
She loves him, but she, like, gives him shit, right? But she is not, like, defined by him. And when he dies, she's not, I am now going to be awarded by default to our friend because I have to be with somebody because that's how movies work. And she just doesn't do that. She's just like, of course I know that he's going to Australia and it's fine. That's what he's going to do and I'll get by. Fuck it. And then at the end, she's just like, you know what? I'm going to go to Australia. And no, we're not going to kiss. We're not even going to hug. We're just friends. It's fine. And he is not, oh, I thought we were going to be together now.
Well, and she has
none of that. It's just, it's so
refreshing. She has one of the best lines. She has one of the best lines, which is about the, before he dies and the rest of it, is that you have the thing where he says, or the thing about, you know, going to Australia or whatever else, and she says to him, she's like, yeah, I wouldn't picture you doing that. I would picture you building something here. And it's like, exactly, because they've known each other forever, and they're close, and they know, it's like, geez, movies, like, you can do this with characters. It's possible. It's a thing you can do.
That is the one thing that that I never got to see growing up that I'm happy to start seeing more of. Is just like male and female characters being friends.
Yeah.
Because there just wasn't. Like, if a guy and a girl are friends, it means that they are eventually going to hook up. Because that's just, why would you be friends with a girl if you weren't romantically attached to her?
Yeah.
Yeah, hearkening back to my references to old Disney movies.
Hmm.
You knew that if there was a man and woman that they spent time on, they were going to hook up.
Right.
You just knew. Right, which taught me to believe that about life, which I regret.
Yeah, it takes a long time to unlearn that shit, doesn't it?
Decades. But that is the whole point, right? Is that, like, it is super refreshing to see art coming out now where two people can exist in a vacuum because they are simply two people in a vacuum.
Right, and if it's a canister vacuum, because if it's just one of those little stick ones, the like little motor on it, they're not going to fit.
It's true.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah.
There's so many things about this that I really enjoyed, but one of the things, and you know, kind of just being a music dork in general, is I just love the soundtrack. The soundtrack was just terrific. Like, it seemed like they made decisions that were cool and bold in terms of different things they placed in there, but nothing felt, you know, and I love Edgar Wright very much, and I love his movies and everything else, but there are times when he uses music and you just kind of go, bah. And it's like there's a little bit of a candy coating to some of those decisions at times, even though I dearly love his things, where like with a movie like this, there's decisions that get made and I don't ever get the kind of like a, oh, that's cool because that's a cover of such and such thing, or oh, that's the whatever. Like, it just has this like ever presence without being showy. I don't know, it was just I really was struck with how cool the how well the music was applied and how that kind of checked in with the rest of it. I really dug that. I thought they did a tremendously good job with that. I really liked that a lot.
Okay, so I had an argument 2 days ago. About caramel apples versus candy apples. Mm. And the fact that some people don't know the difference. One's hard to find. I think one is better. But also, I've had the argument with whether or not a caramel apple's good because someone's only ever had it on the stick. So, like, there's a million of those things. And so, watching this movie, there are moments where the music kicks in and I go, okay, is this crowd service, or is this someone that just has really hip taste? So, Charlie, you're always my barometer. Are these like bands and songs you've known before, or is it simply because I thought that was fantastic? Because I was surprised every time because I didn't know any of the songs. I just thought they were
well. That was kind of that. Yeah, I mean, there's only a couple, one or two. If I'm being very honest, like there was only one or two that even kind of rang a bell towards the beginning, and then honestly, I turned off that the filing system part of my brain. I just kind of was like, okay, like I just want to see what else they give me, and this is really cool. And so, like, there's really only one or two that even rang a bell at the very beginning, and that was kind of it. I really appreciated how like seamless that part of it was, and I really dug that. I mean, I enjoy a fun little music reference in a movie just as much as the next person. I mean, there's plenty of times where I love that kind of thing, but situation, it just seemed to click in with the rest of the movie where it was just sort of like we're not being cute with anything, any decision that we're making in the entire production of the thing. No decision here is cute. It's just the way we want to present the story, and like there's just a naturalness to the way they did all this kind of stuff, and you know, and I mean, we could go on and on. It's kind of late, but like even the characterization of our main guy, like he's not like he's not even like your standard fuck up in this type of story, because usually central characters kind of fuck up who redeems himself. In this case, like he's not necessarily a fuck up. He is in over his head 10 ways till Tuesday and is somewhat aimless. But it's sort of like, at his core, he's like he's a pretty decent kid by and large. And like that kind of adds some agency to his character, and then makes the story more interesting. Because you're not like, okay, well, in this part is when he has the fatal mistake, or this is the part where he gets caught doing this thing, and then he has to make amends for this, and it's like that kind of story arc, that kind of Saved by the Bell type of thing. And it's like, it's not that. It's just sort of like, he just has more presence as a sort of a regular person. And I just go back to how they assemble the rest of the movie. Like, it just, so much of it feels like there's a confidence in what and how they wanted to tell the story. Aside from all the rest of the stuff, the monster's awesome. The monster's so fucking great. I love that monster. Sure. I love it. I just think it's rad. It's got so much, like, design to it. And it's like, oh, I love that thing. I was like, yeah, I want to see that sucker wander around more.
It's like a human figure that's emaciated and kind of covered in mud, but just like a little bit too tall, moves a little too fast, and is just kind of creepy. And like, it is very similar to the one in From the Dark, which makes me wonder if that is just the Irish variant.
That's the Irish vampire, Buster.
You know? Yeah. Well, just like
that's a great observation.
I thought about that. Lith, you know, like the hopping vampire from, was it China?
Korea.
Yeah. Yeah, and it, so they just have these guys who they you have to bury them and pile a cairn on top of them.
Boy, is that. I meant to mention that earlier, because that was one of the things that stuck out to me, is just like, wow, that is a wildly specific thing to do. Mm-hmm. That is, I think the movie, you know, pays out that it's earned. And like, having been there, like, and oof, like that's pretty fucked to think that if someone just kicks rocks, they can just die.
It's such an interesting thing. And you combine that with the, like, if you get close to him, you start bleeding out of an orifice or three. And the blood just kind of follows him in little spidery lines through the pavement. Like, that is some neat shit. That elevates it beyond this the vampire story we've all heard. And they keep contrasting it with Dracula, which I thought was really fun, too.
Yeah, that was that did not get cutesy for me. I kind of enjoyed that was... They played off of the kind of the touristy...
I enjoyed them fighting the idea.
Well, and then,
Dracula.
Like, that playoff of that one, the Canadians, and that whole thing about, like, taking him out there and this, that, whatever else, and the one guy's super skeptical and kind of a jackass and whatever, and, like, how they kind of play that part of it up. But what's great about that is that the movie... points out that that is a fun thing to do in the story, is to kind of like take the piss out of some that of tourists and kind of playing up those that type of stuff. The movie does that and acknowledges it, but then it's like totally moves on. Like, you just keep it kind of like we got more story to tell. Doing the hatchet boat tour for 2/3 of the movie was just not going to be that interesting, you know, as far as just the story. So it's like yet another one of those decisions, you know.
That's a good pull.
They just seem to make every right damn decision. I don't know. I really love this. I thought it was fantastic.
It's charming, and then it's also got some genuine stakes to it, but it's also not afraid to just kind of tear through its cast. Having the kid turned into the vampire and be like, dad takes him and locks him in
the good room. Yeah.
Which was just, like, that's...
Another question I wanted to ask, what does that mean?
Are you not familiar with this concept?
I figured it was like...
Oh, yeah. I'm not. Are you?
In the home...
What does that mean?
Like, in a middle-class home that's striving for upper middle class, you would have your, like, family room where everyone hangs out, and you would have your living room for company. And you would keep that room pristine, and nobody would be allowed in there, least of all children, is what I figured.
Okay, yeah. So, yeah, well, okay, maybe that's it then, because that was baffling to me.
Yeah.
And I spent a lot of time trying to figure it out, because, yeah, to me, I've never heard good room.
I've never heard that either. I just kind of tried to extrapolate it.
We had some family friends growing up
But if you're right, because, yeah, we definitely had, you know, what we called the family room, and then you had the living room, which used to be called the parlor, but now that we call... funeral homes, funeral parlors, we don't call them that.
There's only funeral parlors and ice cream parlors, and maybe we should just combine them.
Well, look, where can I get a phosphate is all I care about. I don't care if you got to crack it off of Grandpa Joe's neck, but...
I've been hankering for an egg cream. No, we had...
Oh man, that's an even
friends,
deeper pull.
We had some friends back east. We had some family friends back east. That's literally why that term was familiar when it came up in this movie. Because I was like, of course, the good room. And it was like in one family's case, they were lower middle class, so it was just like a room with some like books and then like a little fireplace and then like a couple of these nice looking chairs and carpet that had been walked on five times. And then slightly more fancy types, they had like a little like snookery table in there and like a little mini bar and whatever. But it was like, you know, the plastic on the furniture is not too far.
I was going to say plastic couch.
So it's like little plastic slip covers and whatnot. So like that was like when he said the good room, I was like, oh. So that really kind of rung a bell. I was like, oh my gosh. So yeah, I just I was so tickled with this. I thought this was terrific.
Well, that explains it. Yeah, I'd never heard the term. Yeah.
The good room. Welcome. Everything is fine.
It's the good room. Somehow, hopefully, less depressing than the green room.
Right.
100% less Patrick Stewart as well.
Or the room.
No, more Patrick Stewart.
I need 100% more Patrick Stewart in my life, honestly.
Which makes me think of my favorite, one of my more favorite drop-in cameo lines from Simpsons with the stone cutters, which is when they end the thing and he says, "Now let's get drunk and play ping pong." So great.
Ooh. Classic.
I had to do "We're Allowed One" this week.
That's awesome.
So yeah, with this guy, I think Irish horror comedies are just something that I just dig, and I don't know if it's stereotypical or problematic to not appreciate them all individually, but you know, between this and Grabbers and From the Dark, like they know what the fuck they're doing. So yeah, this one is a little bit more serious of a bent,
yeah,
but not like deadly serious, and so it ends up in a nice, fun little place. So everyone should watch this. It's fun. I would say give me 8 out of 10. Boy, you really got the stones to become a vampire.
God, that's fucking funny. to save time, I will try to be brief. But yeah, I would say also right there with you, 8 out of 10. Like this one, I think I was on board with its tone from the beginning, despite not knowing where it was going, but it never disappointed me. So that's, I guess, to me, high praise. And also, the only complaint I have is that, sorry, my voice is going. The only complaint I have is that the songs that it picked to use are so good, it often made me want to pause the movie. Yes.
Yeah.
So, I guess, you know, is that a complaint or a compliment? I can't tell. But that is a thing that happened.
Yeah, I put a couple little search filters, which I can never make work for with a good goddamn, but I put a couple search filters on the social. So if the words "Boys from County Hell" altogether and soundtrack come up at any point, like, you know, as far as like a thing that somebody's going to make available, like, oh, I can jump on that because that's
if they make a soundtrack album, I'll buy it.
This was probably my...
Mondo will do it at some point.
Yeah, shit. Mondo or Vinegar or somebody will do it. This was my favorite thing this week. I really, really enjoyed this. I really love somebody that can take a cool idea and a cool concept, not fall in love with themselves as far as coming up with new ideas and wacky, what happens if the zombies were blah, 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 whatever. Like, not getting in love with that, but instead getting in love with the characters and getting in love with what their other ideas they got going on. And I admire that tenacity and that creativity, and I think it just has just a lot going for it in general. So yeah, I'll say 8.5 out of 10. As Conlon said, you know, I just didn't need to see old basketball head peeing blood. I didn't need to see that. Out of 10. Because that man has a head that's shaped exactly like a basketball.
It's quite
round.
I'm
saying.
It's true. It's a very Charles Barkley head design. This is what it is.
Charles Barkley head.
The Irish Charles Barkley head in terms of the pool that I was in for sentences that I didn't think was going to get said today, nobody picked that one.
Yeah, that, I feel like that's like a discarded lyric from Linoleum from No Effects.
It is my favorite Mountain Goat song. Gonna,
yeah, that's got oh shit, what's the guy's name? Mountain Goats.
Darnielle.
That's what his name is. Yeah, this guy's fingerprints all over the thing.
One way or another, you're on the street with a violin under your chin, singing with a grin. Like,
what? Good, I think now is the time on Sprockets when we pee.
Okay.
Yes.
Oh, thank God.
I let Charlie call the break last time, and now he's drunk with power. And once you've drunk enough power, you have to go pee.
Yes, so, that's how this goes.
Hey, we'll be back in a moment. All right, next up we have the McPherson tape, or Le Tape de McPherson. This is a, like, 66-minute found footage thing that is notable because it came out in 1989. But it's doing that, like, first-person camcorder Blair Witchy kind of thing. I would say that's the only interesting thing really about it, unfortunately, like, having watched it. Except that for the first bit, it gave me some hardcore flashbacks. Because a lot of my memories look like that. Because a lot of my memories have been reinforced by watching old VHS tapes of shit that I barely remember. But it's like it's an alien abduction kind of thingy. And it boils down to a whole lot of people running around and yelling. And the camera kind of swinging back and forth. And that would work when you saw the aliens, it was like, oh shit. But when you see them, it's kind of like, like, I get it. You had to go to Party City and get the costumes, but they look kind of silly. So I think like the platonic ideal of this thing popped up in VHS 2 as the alien abduction thing in that, and was super freaky and really just ball-grabbingly suspenseful, that thing, but it was also 15 minutes long, and so I think this is just it's a swing and a miss. It was really really hard to watch.
It just it feels very like the tone of it is very like, you know I was saying before we recorded, it's like this is one of those maddening type of things where it's like the idea itself as it relates to the concept of found footage is so goddamn brilliant. It is such a great idea. The idea that you'd be filming a fire, because everybody was into camcorders in the 80s, and it was this kind of became this big thing, and home movies and all this stuff, and in a new way, and whatever. So it's such a prevalent thing. And so it's like, that's such a great idea. It's such a great idea. But then you just populate it with these people. And it's like, you know, the guy with the camera, it's like everybody's picking on him all the time. And then, like, and all this stuff becomes repetitive, and like, at a certain point, I was having a hard time remembering which person was which and who was connected to who, and this person was married to this person, but this other one's a sister, and like, I was trying to keep track of that part of it. And then, and I want to say this with love, but I think one of the biggest problems with this is that I would say about half of this cast has never acted in a thing ever. And so when you start to get the tension start to rise, a lot of them just sort of are like, like the mom lady is like, she just keeps repeating some of the same kinds of stuff, and oh come on, and oh no, just but this kind of stuff. And 10 minutes of that, and I was like pulling my hair out because she doesn't come across as somebody who's like got a lot of acting chops necessarily, and so that made it kind of drag and go and whatever. So it's just like, I don't know, you know, it's just idea is utterly brilliant, but just the execution was just really tough to get through.
Yeah, and part of the problem, like when you were talking about how it's hard to keep track of the characters and their connections with each other, it's because it doesn't matter either.
Yeah.
Like, we're not going to get into some familial drama, like, in the downtime of this, and they're not going to learn anything, and, you know, like, it doesn't matter. And yet it's so convoluted, too.
Yeah.
I don't know. Matt, you kind of did the speed run of this, and I think you did
the smarter way.
The right way. You know? What do you got?
Yeah, well, this is a show I didn't plan on watching. I'd never heard of until we watched, or I mentioned the McPherson tapes on, god damn it, whatever the other podcast was that I mentioned. Was it last week or 2 weeks
ago? Oh, that was Tardner, but
god damn it. Anyway, you know, if you listen to this, you can probably find a way to re-listen. But yeah, so that was where I first heard of it, and I was gonna watch it just on my own, you know. Because the first season seems to be related to found footage, and I had literally never heard of this before that podcast, which, again, everything in my life apparently happens a week ago. But it was also so, so invective and interesting that I was like, oh, I should check this out. I do think it has all the problems that people now give the Blair Witch, because those same people have now also seen Cloverfield. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's just unfair. You know, like, especially like if you've watched Cloverfield 10, that while that it is a different style of movie, it's not found footage or whatever, but like we've learned things, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But for the idea that we get upset the idea that we get upset based on the way people do found footage once we've all seen Blair Witch, I think is unfair. Because you still got figured out, you know? And you can go back to Like I Spit on Your Grave for a certain style of movie that I think is disgusting. By the way, if we're talking about The Power, that's the literal opposite. Yeah. but, like, people are taking a swing. And so I feel like this one took one of the earliest swings, and that's interesting. And so maybe, and I don't know, but maybe the Blair Witch was witnessed by, you know, the creators of Blair Witness.
I like Blair Witness, though. I think that's pretty good. I'm picturing a cover with Blair from Family Ties and then Harrison Ford. That's what I'm picturing.
Holy shit, that's the funniest thing.
I'm just picturing now Harrison Ford pointing at her and going, you take the good, you take the bad.
Give me back my daughter.
You get off my plane. Yeah, I think I know what you mean.
Like, Scully, did you ever find...
It's possible that the Blair Witch
folks... Hot Stuff joke... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
I think you're right that the Blair Witch folks might have seen that and gone, ooh, we could do that. But then you could actually, like, what if you could actually see it? And they went ahead and did. I agree that you, like, I don't want to judge this by how far we've come, but at the same time, it's like
it's been 50 years.
At the same time, it's also like, yeah, this is more interesting for what it is.
Yeah.
Than how it is, it's more interesting to as an artifact than
I've run into that, Josh. It's funny you say it that way, because I've run into that a couple times with older films that are like these kind of lost or forgotten things that are way more violent or grotesque than you would expect from like something from the 50s or early 60s. I've stumbled upon a handful of those.
Well, Justify Serpico. Justify Serpico, right? It's just like it doesn't have the language of film.
Yeah, it's,
you know, Justify Scarface, Justify Citizen Kane. The reason to make that joke is it's the Citizen Kane of movies, is because no one's seen Citizen Kane.
Well, and that's kind of, but that's kind of what I mean, is that like as to Josh's point about the, like, as an artifact, it's like there's one that I watched, is this French one from like the late 50s, and it is surprisingly violent for a movie from the 50s. Like, it's very, very gruesome and whatever, but it's also like not very interesting, and it's kind of flat, and it doesn't, there's a lot of lessons that haven't been learned yet. And so then it's like, okay, well, is this transgressive amazing thing because it did it early, or is it just something that you look at and you go, well, okay, that existed, but look at all the ways that we've figured out how to do a lot of this stuff better. Like Peeping Tom is one that I like pretty darn well, but shit, does that work 10 is the some of those things work 10 times better in Black Christmas and another 15 times better in Halloween. So it's like, it's kind of like, you know, how do these things exist in there? So, you know, I think Josh is...
I don't want to make it a joke, but it is a runner. Black Christmas also came up this week in an argument at work.
But I mean, like, so I think that's kind of where, I mean, you know, not to put words in Josh's mouth, but I mean, I think that's kind of where this kind of lies, where it's sort of like, it was tough to get through, but also I was thinking about like a 13 or 14 year old me seeing this at like 11 o'clock at night at our first house in Prescott, like by myself in the living room or whatever else, and probably being pretty nerved out by it. Primarily because I wouldn't have seen any found footagey things prior to that, so it's a very weird artifact in that regard. Like nothing like this really would exist prior to that, and so you take somebody that's 30 years younger and plop them right in the middle of that, and you really get that it's gonna kind of hit a little different, you know. So yeah, I think that's fair. Yeah, I think it's, you know.
So wait, was I dialed out? You saw this when
No. I was saying, like, I was picturing myself as like 13 or 14 at like 11 o'clock at night seeing this and like having no frame of reference and being like, how would this hit different in those circumstances? I mean, I will freely admit when I was 10 years old, the goddamn daylights scared me. You know, so I mean, like, it's one of those things where, you know, the daylights, the things from Doctor Who, you know, so like... So it's, I mean, yep, it's silly, but sure. It's sort of like sometimes it's a matter of framing. So yeah, I kind of am with Josh. Like, this was a tough one to get through just because of what it was. But at the same time, like all right, good swing. You know, as Matt, to your point, like, it is a good swing. So I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'll be a little south of Switzerland on this just because it was so acidic. And so I'll say like, shit, I would say like maybe 4, I guess. Like 4 out of 10, 4 out of 10, just like being an alien walking casually past a fireplace, 10. Because he looks, he just walks.
I like
he
it. Just kind of,
yeah, right. He just kind of go, oh, hey, what's going on?
Yeah. Like, you can tell they're kind of going for eerie, but it just kind of seems like morning, yeah. Dead morning, Dave. Yeah, I don't know. Like, it's 3.5. Out of 10 for me. I think it's I'm glad that it exists and that it's at a place where it can be seen, but yeah, my interest in it was mostly like academic, I guess.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, I feel like this is the, sorry, god damn, my hiccups came back.
Darn it.
This is my I think this is the dry run at, was it Sixth Sense?
Hmm. Signs?
No.
Blair Witch?
What's the one?
Yeah.
Signs, okay. Yes. This feels like the dry run of that, where, like, yeah, you tease it for a long time, and you do a good job of that, but... You don't reveal much. Everything's more implied than shown. But then when you get to, like, you have to show that moment, because in Signs, there's, like, it's probably like 3 seconds of, like, a alien walking by. This movie could afford the same amount of time, but they went to those pop-up Halloween shops.
Yeah. Yeah, like, I had that thought.
You know what I mean? So it's just like, oh, this could be fucking rad. If you were able to afford... Oh, god damn it, I hate my hiccups. If you were able to afford a hiccup. If you were able...
Oh, honey.
I am... rapidly getting non-functional. Okay. But... because that last scene where the three aliens walk in, I think, is well-intentioned and interesting.
Mm.
They simply don't have the capability to pull it off. But I don't think that's their fault.
Like, you think maybe, like, if they, you know, with more kind of skill and seasoning, you could kind of inject more into it? Is that kind of what you're thinking?
I think... sorry. I think we would have seen more interesting...
Well, sure, yeah. Yeah, 100%. Yeah, 100%. Right.
You know what I mean? Like, it would have just looked more in the room and not off the shelf.
You know, and it's funny you mentioned that, too, so, but the off-the-shelf thing, because I honestly was thinking that the movie was going to take a turn, and there was actually people under masks, and it was going to turn into, like a Funny Games type situation. Like, I because of how they looked. You know, and, like, so it's funny you say off-the-shelf, because, like, I was almost wondering if that was where they're going with it, and then just the credits started, and I was like, well, I guess not. I guess it was just they didn't have a lot of money for the... for the mask. And I guess I read the little thing about it. I guess they made the movie with about $6,500. So, you know, it wasn't didn't have a whole lot of dough. What would you Matthew, what would you say for a a numeral?
Well, it's I guess it's slightly troubling, cuz it's like you want to respect them. But also you have to, like, judge what's on the screen, right? So, I don't know. I guess this maybe 5?
That's fair.
That's more than fair.
More than fair, as we say.
Morgan Fairchild. Who is my wife?
Yeah, that's the ticket.
Yeah. All right, let's talk real quick about homunculus, homunculo, pretty much. Boy, is this a thing that happened? briefly.
Holy shit, does this movie challenge you?
Man.
Briefly, the plot of Homunculus. There's a guy who is living in his car. He has money, but is choosing to be homeless to, like, find himself. And a random stranger walks up and asks if he would be willing to participate in a medical experiment that involves cutting a hole in his head, trepanation style, and the theory is that he would that would enable him to see some, like, supernatural or develop a sixth sense. The guy wants the doctor's goal is apparently to prove that nothing paranormal exists and it's all in your head, but potentially that you can have these extrasensory powers. Guy gains the ability to see people's trauma, I suppose.
But, like, kind of only if he covers one eye.
Yeah, he has to cover his right eye, and then when he looks out the left eye, then he sees chili and T-Boz, and he goes chasing waterfalls. And he,
It was either going to be TLC or Ray Stevens, one of the two.
Yeah. So we get a lot of cool visuals, because when he, like, walks by people on the street, he sees their stress, like, illustrated as a metaphor. Like, a guy who's afraid that he has no substance shows up as paper thin, and someone's, like, just a walking mountain of chains. Someone's made out of sand. He finds out he can maybe help take their trauma away, and then maybe that trauma becomes part of him. And then it just unwinds for, like, 45 minutes, right? And I think we end without really knowing what the fuck and who the fuck and why the fuck.
Yeah.
But it's kind of the journey.
Well, and they really challenge you, too. They challenge you.
What that doctor's deal is.
Well, you have his whole part of it, which is a dissertation in and of itself. But then our main guy, like, this movie really pushes you. Because, like, there is a lot of implication, you know, direct and indirect, about, like, what was going on with him and the lady, and, like, something. Just there's a lot of weird, potentially, like, there's, like, some suggestions of abuse stuff, and then there's, like, some other kinds of elements that are factoring into the thing, and then you have, like, whether or not the girl who's, like, the formulation of the other one is, like, like, of age, and then you have, like, but she's, like, this amalgamation of multiple humans, and then does she have control over the powers? Is she aware that it even exists? And, like, what all that stuff means is in relation to, like, your sense of morality, really makes him a hard guy to have at the center of the thing, but he's sort of the one you're supposed to be rooting for, kind of. But then you have like the medical student kid and his whole kind of deal, and it's sort of like, is he this like mad scientist type of a person, or is he like capturing a greater truth? How does that unfold? And then it sort of becomes like, okay, who's the one that's under threat? And it's just like, there's like 53 ideas about morality, mm-hmm. and about consciousness and all this kinds of stuff. And like, I have to watch it 4 more times, but I don't know where, when it, by the time we're done with it, like, I don't know if the movie made a decision one way or the other.
Okay. So this was my main complaint about this movie, but I also didn't know if I had just interpreted it wrong and thinking it was a complaint, because there seemed to be so many variables. Mm-hmm. So yeah, where do you guys
think? I wonder if there is also some translation issues.
Like, I wonder, honestly.
If the subtitles are really getting at it, because for a while, Dr. Guy is saying, this isn't real, the world around you is not real.
There are times I understood the cognates, right, and the subtitles were different.
And that led me to believe that we were headed for a Vanilla Sky, mm-hmm. kind of situation, mm-hmm. yeah. where right. after the accident, him and his wife, like his wife's dead, and him and the girl are both in like the ICU or something, you know, right? Yeah. With a full Wizard of Oz ending. Because the guy kept saying, like, none of this is real, and eventually you're going to realize that. But I think he was saying the weird shit you're seeing isn't real. And he's like, yes, it is. But no, it's not. And like, this is a movie that starts with a POV shot from inside the skull. Yeah. When the trepanation begins, and I was like, wow, that's a bold choice. And then it's like, that is one of the tamest...
Bold move and much appreciated.
One of the tamest visuals in this whole movie, because we also have a lady who's made entirely out of sand, who grows legs and a vagina out of her shoulders, so that she can... And the vagina flaps like a little puppet and tries to seduce him.
That reminded me of...
There's a lot to unpack.
That reminded me a lot of... was that Pedro Almodovar movie? Was it Talk to Her? And that's the one that's got that scene, the dream sequence, where you have like the dancers and then the gigantic naked woman laying there, and they dance in and out of the vagina, and it's like,
oh,
I don't know what any of this means, but Pedro Almodovar has got some things on his mind.
I think we talked... Okay, never mind. Sorry. God damn, my hiccups. It's probably less disturbing if I don't mention the movie I'm thinking of.
The Sound of Music.
Let's... yep, that's the one. What was your other one?
Talk to her. The Pedro Almodovar movie.
Almodovar. Yeah. Anything that...
Oh, fuck. okay, so to try to bring it back around, did you find it interesting or compelling that, like, I think we got not very, very long about things being sand, sorry, before they became, like, Scrabble?
Yeah.
Letters. Oh, yeah.
Like, how'd you... I'm so sorry about the hiccuping. I know that has got to be wicked annoying, because sometimes you hear him...
It's worse for you than it is...
Yeah, I mean, you're a pretty gentle hiccuper, quite honestly. There's plenty of people that do the kind of... Yeah! Kind of nonsense, and that's different.
Yeah. Well, I'm trying to keep him... internal. But...
Up inside.
Yeah, that was another area. That was another area creatively that I was like, I was fascinated by, but I was just utterly and completely baffled by. Like, I just.
Yeah, this whole. That whole sequence.
Sorry.
Right.
The sand versus Scrabble. Yeah. Birds.
But then every part of his encounter with that girl is so weird and so hard to parse. as, because like the mob boss one is straightforward. It's like you have this childhood trauma and here it is and there we go. Even doctor guy, like you have daddy issues and this is what, all of this makes perfect sense. And with her, it was just like, you are made of sand and you're crumbling, but the sand is all letters of like, you're pervert and old man, and then you want me to have sex with you, but you don't, and maybe I'm going to do it anyway, and maybe it's going to be okay with you, and that's going to heal both of us, and then I'm going to have to break open the scab on your leg, and so you could kick the window, and all of that. That is like a 20-minute short film that, like, David Lynch and David Cronenberg read the script and went, yeah.
That's a bit much.
Yeah. It's just, I don't...
It's a lot to handle.
I understand. I'm not sorry I watched this, and there are parts of it that I really enjoyed, but I wish that it had been a little more grounded.
Well, nor am I, but that is also one of the... Sorry. Keep hiccuping. Question... All right. Questions that I have is... What the fuck? Did you guys feel like this movie took a hard left turn at some point?
I think once it starts to focus
on his relationship with the lady in red, with the blank face, when that started to become a central part of the story, it still was keeping with the rest of the story, but it was also like, it felt like it got kind of darker in like a way that I can't explain or articulate, but like it seemed to take a darker kind of a feel to where it was kind of less about some greater truth to be gleaned by the end of the movie so much as it was like how does anybody associated with any part of this experiment or the visions or the traumas or whatever, how does anybody survive any part of this, like, you know? And that was kind of my thing. It was just, well, I think, like, once that started to become a thing, that part of it started to crumble away, and it's like, boy.
I think what they did was they spent the first... Sorry, I'm still hiccuping. I'm just trying to keep it quiet. No, never mind. But they spent the first like 20 minutes trying to put the rules of the world together. But then they decided to throw a curveball at you. But that curveball, I think completely changes the tone. And I think it... God damn it. Sorry. I think it is very well... very well played. Because it... I think it is done... While it may be in a matter I don't appreciate or wish to see, like, I don't hate him for it. Like, well played. Like, okay, so you might not be my flavor, but like, I don't. God damn it. I don't disregard
your capability. Yeah, that's actually a great way to say it, because like, there's just so much on display. Whether or not it jives is kind of immaterial to the fact that it exists. It's like, man, they really, so I was swinging for the fences. It's sort of like we're really going for it, and not in like a jackassy way either. I didn't get the sense of this that they were like,
There is a
jackassy, yeah, no, 100%. And I don't think that this movie is that.
Yeah.
And I think if it was that, it would just be so goddamn insufferable, or, you know, French, where it would just be so, you know, like, well, you know what I mean? Like, there's enough of those French ones that are just sort of like, they're so proud of themselves, and it's just like, but you're giving me nothing to access, and so I just, this becomes kind of an endurance test, whereas, like, I don't, this doesn't have that vibe to it, but it certainly don't think it has any, it
are we talking new French extremism?
Yeah, it could have... It could have been a hell of a slog, and it's not that. It's like, I always wonder if the filmmaker doesn't have an idea of where they're going, or I just didn't pick up on where they were going. And I think in this one, this guy has very specific things that he's trying to get across, and I'm just not catching all of it. So it's not like we were talking last week about, like, a swing and a miss, where it didn't miss the ball, it missed me. And so, like, I don't quite get it. And I was hoping it would have unfolded more with him, like, helping people and finding out that he's giving a piece of himself away every time he does it, and then finding out what the deal is with the doctor and why the doctor is doing this shit. But instead, it goes heavily into that relationship with the wife.
Yeah.
I mean, part of it is the, you know, and it's mildly racist, but the face blindness that people have has been scientifically proven. You know, people in other, from other ethnicities can be kind of similar looking. And I couldn't tell if they were switching his wife and the girl's face back and forth. I felt like sometimes they were and sometimes they weren't. But I couldn't keep those faces in my mind enough to get there and to really know.
Yeah.
So, like, yeah, it's like if they cast, you know, like, Javier Bardem and the other dude that looks just like him, who is the comedian in Watchmen, and just went back and forth between those two. Like, no. Cast, like, Matt Damon and Lyle Lovett, and then we know when one is on and the other one is not. Like, so, I don't know. Yeah, this bakes my noodle in a mostly agreeable way, I would say. Given the time on the clock, I'm going to say let's just rate it out, because we could talk about it for 3 hours, but
yeah,
for me, it's I have to do like 7 out of 10. I am impressed with it. It really had some amazing visuals, but I think it swerved away from a more interesting story and into a more esoteric one. So I'm like, give me a 7 out of 10 dudes made out of chains, because that dude looked cool.
Yeah.
Well, I'm still hiccuping, so sorry. But I think... I think this is a movie that... unapologetically try to do a thing that might create a movie that was maybe more important than making something easier. So I think this movie might be smarter than it looked, I guess, is kind of my takeaway. You know, I thought it was good. I honestly... God damn it. I honestly really enjoyed it. Like, I think it was fun. I do think it kind of takes a hard left, and you have to kind of either go with it or not. I don't know that it... Like, if this was put in just, like, a regular-ass cinema... I don't think they have a good chance. I feel like that's kind of where this lands. But for fans of the genre, this is doing perhaps more than it sounds like on
paper. Yeah. Does that make sense? Yeah, that jives.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, yeah, that's about where I land. So that, what did I say? That puts me at, let's say 8.
I can dig it.
I would. Yeah, I was gonna go. Yeah, I was gonna. I was thinking that I was gonna go seven. I just like. Yeah, I just. When it's all said and done, I think that I've got, you know, like I said, 53 more questions and like a bunch of just, you know, whatever. What I do think it comes down to also is that old Takashi Shimizu has got a pretty ballsy approach to visualization in a way that like you could get uncomfortable as a viewer being like, okay, well, this is this crazy thing that I'm looking at. But then when he, like the robot, for example, and then when the robot head moves and then you have this like crying little boy, you're like, damn, that is, yeah, that right. I mean, it's wild. Like you're pulling from these areas, you know, just all these different ideas that are forcing themselves in on each other. And it creates this really wild kind of a thing. But I so appreciate that it's not up its own butt. So I would say, pardon me, I would say 7 out of 10. I would say 7 out of 10. 7 out of 10. You've got red on you. Because those marks on the head are just like, bleh. Well, anyway.
I need this movie like I need a hole in the head. Additional hole in the additional head. Right, we'll take a quick break and we'll be back with our films for next week. So next week we are an all Shudder all the time kind of organization. We are going to watch Attack of the Demons. It's kind of nifty looking animated stop motiony thing. And then we're going to watch The Reckoning, which is Neil Marshall's new one. Always excited to see something from him. And Fried Berry, which looks ridiculous, and I can't wait to see it. And we will have a short this week that we will put up when we put the show up for download, so you'll find that in the show notes. And with that, I will point out that I've been Josh this entire time, and I will bid you a fondue.
Yes.
Yep. My bad for not knowing the name of the short. I just know that there's like 3 venues on which I look at shorts, and I can't remember which one I found the one I thought we should watch this week. So hit the website, yeah. It'll be there. Otherwise, as far as you all know, I've been hit. I've been hiccuping this entire time, and I'm sorry, especially this.
And this is Charlie and Austin. Take care of yourselves. Take care of each other, and then we will talk towards you again real soon. Be good in the meantime. We'll see you later. Bye bye.
That was beautiful how I made the obvious joke and there was just dead ass silence. Like, it's always amazing when you guys do that.
God damn it. Well, we try.
Bitches, you magnificent sons of bitches.